Hi, this is Lisa Arnone. I'm here with Armand DeMille doing The Positive Mind. We're going to continue today with our graduate class in positive psychology. We are talking to me as he would to student or supervisor. I'm a therapist with a full practice who also comes to him to learn how to see more, how to see with a more experienced view.
Good going. Good going. That's really terrific. All right, so it's about learning. And there's so much about learning that takes place. It's very hard to know anything until you try it, right? So Lisa can get all these words ready to say, and then she gets up there to say it, and boom, you can feel it. So how do you feel the fluster happens? What does it get ahead of you? What happens to you? Can you recall it?
Yes, I get ahead of myself because I'm looking at the words and I'm looking ahead in the words. I'm looking at what I'm supposed to say and what I'm supposed to say next. I feel that I lose my breath so that it's hard to catch my breath and speak. And then I just try every time I make a mistake to stay calm.
Are you excited?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. It's an exciting thing to do. At the same time, you're scared. At the same time, you're losing track and fumbling.
Yes.
It's an amazing thing.
Very complicated.
Yeah. Well, you see, this is the thing that that we understand. You know, we understand this about people, that people are very complicated. And one of the things, this is what we've been doing for the last two classes, is Lisa asked me, who came to me as a supervisee, and said, tell me, you know, give me your aspect. She studied with a lot of different people. And she said, show me your approach, Armand. Show me how you do it, having been a guest, having been someone who's listened to many of our programs. How do you get your mind to work the way it does? And it's a funny thing because I don't get my mind to work the way it does. My mind works the way it does. However, I can see how other people's mind doesn't work that way. And one of the best places to see it, of course, is with the unsuspecting public. If you're listening, walking down the street, and you hear two people arguing, and they're fighting about the toilet paper rolls, and they, you said you were going to buy them. No, you said you were going to buy them. No, you bought them. And you know, this is not the issue. But what becomes very fascinating to me is the therapists who are in business and the professionals who are in the business to help people, straighten out their lives. So I've dedicated my life to teaching. And my idea is to teach not only people, but teachers. And very rarely do I run across a teacher where I would say to them, you know, hey, come on, would you be my apprentice? And certainly I feel that way about you, Lisa. You're terrific. I think you're a very knowledgeable person. But what I love about you is how positively you respond to criticism. How you could take something that would be critical and turn it into a learning experience and not let it just turn you into a sourpuss with passive-aggressive kind of hostility and stuff like that. You would never do that, would you, Lisa?
No, I would never do that.
Hey, okay, but here we go. So we're going to take an example of this today, and it's one of the most, it's very important. Phase three of our teaching. This is the third one. If you are a counselor or a teacher or a doctor, or if you shine shoes or wash cars, you deal with people. When you deal with people, how do you deal with people? There are certain people who deal with people, look at them, and they look at them, and they could separate everybody into two categories, the good people and the bad people. The good key people usually are people who reflect your ideals, what you believe in, and usually even better than you live them yourself. So a good person would be well-dressed, would be neat, would be clean, would be organized. This is the good people, right? And then we have the bad people, the disorganized, the sloppy, the indiscriminate, right? Now, because we have that, the good people and the bad people, and this separation in our minds, it stops us from seeing people. We are they good or are they bad? That's it. Are they good for you or are they bad for you? So my idea of teaching and showing is to show you that this goodness and badness doesn't really exist, but it all is for a good reason. And I'm hoping that not only by showing Lisa, but by showing all of you out there who are in contact with other people, the same kind of thing. Because here's what I believe. I believe if you listen without judgment, if you can see without judgment, if you don't feel critical of people, you become a more loving human, a better human, you contribute more, and you teach. So I think it's a good thing.
I think a trick to that is, even if you can't resist the impulse to judge immediately when you see somebody, if you take 5 minutes to actually talk to them, then your mind can be opened up to who they really are. Whether they're
who's the you?
Anyone.
Are you talking about yourself?
Certainly about myself, yes.
Let's do it from the frame of Lisa.
Okay, so
If I
meet somebody and I see them dressed in a certain way or any number of things, what you were talking about, clean, neat, organized, and I make an immediate judgment. I mean, it's not even a judgment, it's an observation.
Right.
But I'm going to depend on that observation as I approach that person. If I spend 5 minutes talking to that person, I can understand that maybe what I see when I walk up to them isn't what I hear when they speak to me and what I feel when I'm interacting with them.
So you're lucky. You're lucky that you have, that your discrimination, whatever you may feel, kind of disappears as you get more familiar with people.
Yes.
Now think of us as therapists, right? Now here's a therapist, we deal with many cases. One of the most common syndromes that we deal with clients is people who turn to us because they feel like they just can't handle it themselves. In fact, they don't feel like they can handle anything themselves. So they tend to turn to people for help. They call their doctors, they call everybody to try to get some help because they feel powerless to deal with the world. In psychiatry, it's often called the dependent personality disorder. It used to be called the asthenic personality disorder. But this is characterized by this pervasive dependency on other people. And it's like it's all over the place, and we're going to talk more about this. Now, as soon as you hear that, as soon as I say to you, Lisa, or anybody listening in the audience, think about somebody who's really dependent that you know. Picture somebody who is totally dependent, who is, they either adore their husbands or wives, they're totally dependent. They are always there just for the other person. They have no personality of their own. Can you think of someone like that? Can you think of a personality like that, a person like that? Or you think of yourself that way at times? All right? If we see this kind of a person and they come into a psychiatrist's office, the psychiatrist will evaluate them thusly. What would they say, Lisa? What would we look at? Including the negative way we would normally see it.
Well, if you're saying someone seems to have no sense of self, no sense of an identity, then I think a psychiatrist would look first for depression and see if that person is depressed. If that was missing, then I guess that the psychiatrist would start to look at character issues.
All right, so let's say instead of psychiatrist, we would look at you.
Okay.
Okay, so as much as possible, Lisa, give me eyes. Okay? I that. So how do you characterize somebody as being, when they come in, how do you look at it and say, you know, this may be a dependent personality disorder, and so what do you look at? What are you looking for?
I'm looking at their relationships. I'm looking at their sense of their self. I'm looking at what they're unhappy about and what they are happy about. And
what is it about the sense of self that you would be examining to kind of determine whether or not you're dealing with that disorder?
I think if I felt the person was stating in a consistent way that they felt unable to overcome or to address the problems that they're presenting, if they talk about feeling powerless in response to obstacles or conflicts, then I would wonder about, you know, their sense of their power or powerlessness. So that would make me wonder about their relationships and who's in charge.
You know, there's a thing. People with this syndrome see other people as much more capable of shouldering life's responsibilities. They see this world as very complex. And to deal with the competition of life, they find very, very difficult. So when you hear somebody talking about that, that is meanings. They see other people as powerful and competent, capable of providing a sense of security and support, and they look to others to take the lead and provide continuous support. So if a person like that comes to me and they say, here I am a weak, nebbishy person, I really can't do it on my own. Do you know what I first do? I look at it and I say to myself, okay, what's the advantage of this, of being this way? Well, first of all, if you're somebody who feels that they could be easily put upon, who can't defend themselves, who feels weak and powerless, it's a tremendous advantage. The advantage is nobody, I cannot afford to get into battle with anybody. So I won't fight with anybody. Now, what would be the advantage of that? Well, a person who believes that would avoid all conflict. And they would just avoid it at every turn they could. So they're never in the fray. So they're not in danger. They're never in physical danger because they're always being submissive. They're always saying, no, you win, I lose. So there's some significant advantages to being dependent. And being dependent also feeds other people. For example, if you're an aggressive person or you're somebody in a relationship with a dependent personality, what's it like?
Well, if you're aggressive, I think that it would be an opportunity to express a lot of aggression without any reprisal, without any consequences. You know that the person will never leave you.
And knowing that they would never leave you does something for you.
Yes, it gives you a lot of latitude, a lot of freedom. It gives you a lot of freedom. And maybe also you don't even have to worry or think about that you're doing something wrong or hurtful.
You don't have to question yourself. So the advantage of having somebody who's really dependent as your partner is it makes you feel powerful and you don't have to question yourself.
Right.
You have to say, oh, you know, I must be good because nobody challenges me. Well, there's another advantage. There's a lot of advantages to this relationship approach of being somebody who is dependent for the other person and for you. Now, there's even an advantage to the therapist or physician or microbiotic teacher, you know. What's the advantage to them? Well, the advantage to them is that the person who comes to them for help depends on them completely. So if you're a therapist and you have a dependent personality disorder, if that's what they're called, and they're coming to you for help, they're going to cling to you forever. They're not going to let you go.
Well, so we were talking about this before. It depends on the kind of therapist that you are. If you are a therapist who is very strict with your boundaries, then you're going to be very disappointing to someone who is dependent, because the boundary around the therapy will be in the hour unless there's crisis, and if there's crisis, a phone call of short duration. That will never be satisfying to someone who wants to be dependent in the way that you're describing. I think it might take a little longer for a therapist who is looser about those rules But I think that a therapist would eventually find that this kind of dependence goes outside the bounds of what is possible in a therapy relationship.
And if not therapy, let's even say doctor-patient. Let's say grocery store owner, grocery store purchaser, you know what I mean? It could be anybody. Yeah. Everybody who's got something for sale loves somebody who tends to be passive and dependent because they get attached. They talk about it as loyalty. You know, you got to keep the client loyalty. You never want to really offend them. You want to make sure that they're going to come back over and over again. This is the advantage, right? This is what you exploit in some level. On one level, on the other level, from the other person's point of view, life is not so bad. Because as a dependent personality, people treat you very well. They take care of you. They may try, they can't really exploit you too much because they would lose you. So they look to maintain you. So it's a strategy that works.
Yes, it can work.
And what it can work is an even better way of saying it. Because this other strategy of independence and total independence and I refuse to lean on you in any way, that doesn't work any better as from what I see. I see independent people as unhappier as much as I see dependent people unhappy. So I don't think that it's just the independence that makes you feel good.
Well, I wonder who's happy. So if someone is dependent for all the more difficult things, conflictual things, but they're very good at taking care of the person who takes care of them, would that be a kind of happiness?
Certainly a good question. Certainly a good question. By the way, and if you have questions about this today, we will be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be starting that in just a few minutes. We want to dedicate as much of our show as possible. So back to dependent personality. So although it sounds like a criticism, in many ways, we're saying, okay, let's say the world is separated into the kind that lean on people and the kind that don't lean on people. Now, the kind that don't lean on people are not necessarily any better off than the kind that do lean on people, because we can put them in categories, too. You know, they could have their own pathologies. They could be their own kind of, you know, I'm going to sit in my cellar and never talk to anybody. Whereas the dependent personalities could have their own pathologies, too. It could be really deep. There is not necessarily one better than the other. The one that gets that we care about as therapists is, does it interfere with your livelihood? Does it interfere with your day-to-day functioning? Does it interfere with your physical health? Does it interfere with your ability to maintain a family relationship, meaning having a family? Does that? That's what you're going to come to me about. Because those are the things that you find unhappy. But if you're not unhappy and you could function this way and you do well with this, well, you don't need me. And I believe it's possible. Nobody believes it's possible, but I believe it is. I believe it is possible for somebody to say, that's the way I like it. That's the way it is. And those of us who have Italian grandmothers, right? Did you know this somewhere back in your family? About people who were satisfied
with... Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes up all the time. It might not work for me, but if it works for somebody else and they're happy and they're doing well, I don't have anything to say about that. I'm happy for them.
Right. They could look miserable. They could look unhappy. But they talk and they're satisfied. So maybe part of the dependent personality disorder is trying to find safety in the world. Maybe that's all everybody is looking for is safety, Lisa. You think that's it? They're looking to find finally where they can settle down and feel safe.
Yeah, I think that's it. I do. I think people want to not be afraid. I think people want to not have to be in conflict all the time. I think people want to be able to know that when they have a place to go that's like a refuge. Even it's familiar, it's theirs, it's their home.
Yeah, finding home is such an important thing. 212-209-2900. We're going to start taking your calls. I kind of zipped this on Mike a little earlier. Mike, do we have any calls yet? 212-209-2900. You may not actually be in the studio. 212-209-2900. Let's go a step further with this. So the relationships of the person who is dependent is that they may submit to abuse and intimidation. They may get discovered later as having been through a lot of bad stuff. And then people feel the need to get in there and interrupt it. People feel the need to do something about it, and the hospitals get in and the police get in, especially if children are involved. So they will automatically bring to the attention. But according for this to be a category, let's say that you could get this. The person who we would specify, clarify, or has this disorder, has difficulty making everyday decisions without an excessive amount of advice and reassurance from others. It's so hard to make it. Did you ever meet the person who said, should I get this one or should I get that one? Should I do this? Should I get that? And they feel so insecure about everything. Which one did you finally get? Well, I didn't get either one because I'm really not sure. Do they need to, they ask other people to take responsibility for the major areas of their lives. They have difficulty expressing disagreement with others because of fear of loss of support or approval. And this is a very important thing. They don't want to tell you when they're upset with you because they don't want to lose it, and they kind of swallow it on the inside. They have difficulty initiating projects or doing things on their own because initiating is a lack of judgment or abilities. So this is one way to live. This is a way to go through life.
It's not clear to me, though, with this level of dependence, how a person is happy, how they're able to tolerate their existence. Doesn't the swallowing things and the feelings of helplessness become overwhelming at some point? I mean, wouldn't it?
It would make sense that it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But so would standing up all the time. So would being strong all the time. So would taking care of everything all the time. Doesn't it make you crack your back sometimes?
Yeah.
You know, doesn't being strong bother you sometimes as well?
Yeah, but it also means you're not holding on to things, not lugging a lot of stuff around with you.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure either.
You might be lugging it right on your back. Good. These people also go to excessive lengths to obtain nurturance and support from others. They volunteer to do things that are unpleasant. They feel uncomfortable or helpless when they're alone because they don't believe they could take care of themselves. Now, that's a very important thing, and that's one of the things that start to get worrisome. And they urgently seek relationship as a source of compare when a close relationship ends. They jump from place to place. They go from one person to the next. So the following questions will help you assess yourself in this category. Some people enjoy making decisions. Others prefer to have someone they trust guide them. Which do you prefer? Do you seek advice for everyday decisions? Do you find yourself in situations where other people have made decisions about important areas in your life? Is it hard for you to express a different opinion with someone you're close to? What do you think would happen if you did? Do you often pretend to agree with others even if you don't? Why? Could it get in your trouble if you disagree? Do you often need to help to get started on a project? Do you ever volunteer to do unpleasant things for others so they will take care of you when you need it? Are you uncomfortable when you're alone? Are you afraid you will not be able to take care of yourself? Have you found that you're desperate to get into another relationship right away when a close relationship ends, even if the new relationship may not be the, quote, best person for you? And finally, do you worry about important people in your life leaving you? You know, one of the worst things about being somebody who is that dependent is the fear of the death of people around you. They suffer from great more fear. So when you ask someone, you know, who seems to be phobic about death, and you say to them, you know, what are you worried about? And they say, oh, they're terrified of their mother may die or their father may die. You may be hearing about dependent personality disorder. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. Well, I know we've got...
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Barely hear you. Speak up a little,
hi,
please.
Hi, how you doing, sir? I was listening to you. Hello?
Good, I can hear you. We just have to talk as loud as you can. Yes. Turn down your radio all the way.
Yes, sir. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm talking to you, sir. It's been... I'm so excited. I was listening to you all the way. I just graduated from finance, and I have that exactly what you're saying right now, when I need people to tell me I need to make a decision about something important in my life. I ask people to help me out, which I try to get approved from people to make my life decision.
Have you always been like this all your life?
Yes, sir. I figured that I have. I just want to share with you that I think I wasted so many time of my life for being imperfect. I'm a very loving person. I take care of my family, and no matter how hard it is for me, I send money to Bangladesh. That's where I'm from. But when it comes to me, I can't do nothing. You know, I'm like all over the place. And when I was younger, I'm 29 years old. When I was in 21, 22, 23, I was all over the place, like, you know, seeking people's attention and stuff like that. When I'm getting, since now I'm almost 30, what I do now is even though I make decisions, is I call my friends and people who I think care about me. I try to get approved from them on what I am trying to do.
And now, do you find that you're growing? Do you find that you're becoming more independent?
Yes. But one thing is like as I'm getting older, I feel like I'm seeking attention from people. And like I'm not American. I get discriminated all the time, almost like, you know, on my profession. But I see the bigger picture. I swear to God, I started with the WBAI in 3-4 months, and I changed everything. I listen to your show all the time.
So you're changing. What's your name?
My name is Javed.
Javed, it's really a pleasure to speak to you. It sounds to me, even though you describe yourself this way, that you're in the middle of change, that there's a part of you where this transformation is taking place. You're being able to go to school yourself and graduating from school. Even making this call today is an act of somebody who is developing more self-confidence. So I think you're on the path, and I think it's a darn good one.
Sir, I want to ask you one question. Since I'm very, very young, very little, as far as I can go back, from third grade or fourth grade, sir, I have something called maladaptive disorder. That means the daydreaming. Can you say anything about that?
That's quite a thing. We're going to have to do a whole program on that. But I'm sure you've searched it up on the internet and read about it, have you not?
Yes, but every time, sir, like something comes up and I lose my concentration and all that. I just want to add it that in that dream, I'm so perfect. Like, I don't care about what the other people saying. All I'm doing is helping others, helping you and everybody.
That's perfect. It's perfect. Listen, we're going to answer that. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to answer that question about that very thing. Could you hang on the line with us?
Okay, yes, sir. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then we'll be talking about maladaptivity.
We'll be in New York.
Very good.
Clapped in church on Sunday morning.
The young man is still on the
Grandma's
line.
Played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, baby, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand. Grandma's hand. Soothe the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand. Used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand. Used to lift her face and tell her she'd say, baby, grandma, understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, grandma's hand. Grandma's hand. Used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand. Pick me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand. Boy, they really came in a handy, she'd say. Matty, don't you whip that boy. What you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core. But I don't have grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for grandma's hand.
Why grandma's hands? Well, there's a kind of dependency that I kind of think is awful nice. You know, Bill Withers. Hey, we still got him on the phone. Javid is still on the phone with us.
Yes.
Javid, good. Let's go back to your question. Your question about your daydreams. Now, here's a man who feels that he's always had difficulty functioning in life. He feels like he's weak and powerless compared to everybody else. Except when he daydreams. What happens, Javid?
I, sir, everything flows 100% naturally. I can imagine myself anywhere in this world, like, without having the fear of getting judged by anybody and get my word done. And since I feel empowered when I think of doing something, good for people, and I'm changing them. That's what I think when I actually dream. But when it comes to the reality, everything is different.
Javid, the difficulty you have is very clear to me. It's a problem you have with your own feeling of aggression and anger. Somewhere inside you, there's one prohibited emotion, and that's anger and aggression. And one of the things that would happen, I think you're going to grow very well on your own, but if you were in a good psychotherapy with somebody, they would focus on this aggression and they would help you see it. Because if you see it, if you allowed yourself to see it, feel it, and deal with it, you would find that you wouldn't feel as powerless. That's the way out. So I'd say one of two things, Jared. Javid, you're going to make it on your own. Just going to take some time. Or search out some help with that and tell them, I need some help with my feelings of aggression. And it'll move you along quicker.
You said regression? I missed that word.
Aggression.
Aggression. Oh, I see.
Aggression, as in aggress. As
you
in...
Something happened when I was earlier, like I'm kid, little...
I can barely hear you, if you could speak up a little...
Do you think it's something happened when I was very young?
No, I think it's a family system. Especially if you're from Bangladesh. I believe that there is an investment in not expressing your anger, and that the expression of anger is really something that is not convenient for anybody. So I believe this is part of your family upbringing.
Oh my God, yeah, that could be it.
But it's not a tragedy. It's something.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. I'm really feel honored. You put me on the radio.
Okay, send me an email when you get a chance.
Yes, sir. I will listen to your show again. I'll catch up.
Thank you, Jared.
Thank you,
Javid. This is Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Jose Tejada. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for all your hard work and putting the show together. I want to say that about 2.5-3 years ago, I was listening to you, And you said a couple of words that actually helped me tremendously in my life. It was in regards, you were talking about a comment that someone made to you, asking you that, how do you know when you're a grown-up, let's say, when you're a person that, how do you determine that you're actually an adult, let's say, or a person that takes on responsibility and actually does the right thing? And from that point on, I've been able to figure out that I needed to do things for myself, because I was one of those dependent people, mostly on my mother and my older sister. They'll clean up anything for me, and they'll take care of everything for me. And then from that point on, I was able to realize that I needed to do things for myself. And those few words that you said actually helped me tremendously. Now I'm a person that has, make my own car payments. I'm actually a homeowner. So I've been able to progress in a positive way in my life. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, Jose, thank you very much. But let me tell you something about that. We all have moments in life when we're ready. You know, we're ready. And it could be, you can be perfectly ready to change from a sick way of life to a healthy way of life. Let's say you're somebody who just eats hamburgers all the time. And then suddenly, you know, you decide that you're going to become a vegetarian and change your life and eat salads and do only healthy foods. That moment is not because you met somebody who convinced you. Let's say you met Gary Null walking down the road, and he said, yeah, you should change to vegetarianism. That's not what makes the change. What makes the change is when we're ready. By the time you heard me on the air say those words, you were ready to change. I would love to take credit for all the goodness in the world and say, I made it happen, but I don't make it happen. But when a person finally hears, when they're ready, that's when they begin to change. Psychotherapy, which is what we've been talking about, is very much like that. By the time a client or a patient comes into psychotherapy, they're already in the moment of change. The very act by coming in is a moment of change. What happens with too many therapists is they get too complicated and they get in the way of that change. Sometimes the therapist wants to stop the person from changing without even knowing it. Whereas if you just follow their path, they're going to do it on their own, like you did, Jose. So even though my words were magic to you, you were really going there yourself, and I really am glad for it.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you so much. Finding WBAI was I found it by accident around 4 years ago. Driving home one afternoon, I bumped into Hugh Hamilton, and it's actually...
I hope he didn't get hurt. What do you mean you bumped into him?
It was the best accident. Well, on the radio. I was scanning through the radio.
I got you.
It was the best accident that I've had in my life, so...
You is a wonderful man. He's a wonderful, smart man, absolutely. And I'm glad you extended out to us. Thank you very much, Jose. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Have a good day.
212-209-2900. Now, before we go there, you understand what I'm saying, Lisa, about the moments?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, absolutely. I've had that experience with people who come to therapy. I think our job as therapists is to stay out of the way and help people stay out of their own way.
Facilitated, actually. Yeah. You want to feather it, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like sometimes you want to fan yourself. You want to fan the flame the person's going.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them a little gentle breeze to keep going, mm-hmm. like wherever they're going. Saying, okay, you're in the way. If they are on the way, sometimes people are doing things that are harmful to themselves.
Right, well, that's a different...
And that's a different story. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Marie.
Hello, Marie.
I just want to thank you. I really enjoy your show a lot. And I find it so fascinating, this whole thing about psychology. Anyway, you know, you talked about something that caught my attention about being the strong person. And people always saying how strong you are. You know, last week I lost my younger brother. And last year I lost my son. And, you know, people always say to me, you know, wow, like, they're amazed. Like, you're so strong, you're so strong. And I think to myself, like you said, that's the flip side. Like, I mean, it's not that I'm strong. I don't know. This is the way my psyche is. I can't help it. It's not that I'm strong. This is the way I handle death and loss. But people always put that on me, and in a way, it could almost go against, like, it could make me think, wow, I'm strong. I could help someone. You know, that's how they see me. So when they have problems, like you were talking about those people, those dependent people, they like to come to me and kind of latch on to me because they think I'm strong.
Well, wait. Back it up a second. Let's talk about something because I think you've got some lessons. What's your name?
Marie.
I think you've got some lessons to teach. So if you don't mind my asking you.
Oh.
How did your son die?
My son, he contracted a bacteria. And he was compromised before that, but he contracted this bacteria that just staph infection that just ravished his, you know.
Was he compromised with AIDS before that?
Yeah, he was.
So he had AIDS, mm-hmm. and then he got an MRSA or a staph.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then that kind of took him off.
Yeah.
So how many years was he sick with AIDS?
Well, he was born. He's my stepson. He was born with it.
So he's your stepson. He was kind of born with AIDS,
yeah.
So he's always been challenged.
Yeah.
So you've never really, really owned him. You never really had him because he was always on the exit door.
No, he had a quality of life, believe it or not.
Yes.
Kid did a lot when he was, you know, there were times where he was well. I mean, when he was born, they said he didn't have 6 months. He lived to 27.
Yeah.
He had somewhat of a normal life. I mean, he skateboarded. He rode his bike. He did a lot of things. You know, I never treated him like he was this sickly person that couldn't do anything. And for a long time, he didn't know because he was born with it. But once he found out, he got depressed, and that's when things kind of turned around.
So when he died, what happened to you? What happened to you emotionally?
Oh, my God. Well, I quit my job, and it made me look at my mortality and made me think about life and how precious it is and, you know, how it's important to try to do the things you love and love the people that are around you and, you know, be kind and all those things. And I thought I'd learned that lesson, but then my brother died. And
how did that happen? How did your brother die?
He had chronic asthma.
Wow.
And he didn't make it. He was suffering. He suffered, too, his whole life with asthma. So I guess there's been a lot of loss and sickness in my life, and I was even questioning, am I immune to these feelings? Am I immune to you know, sickness, the feelings that come along with sickness and death? Like, I've become so accustomed to them. Am I immune, or either have I developed these tools, and this is how I deal with it?
Well, it kind of makes sense in both ways, you know, Marie?
Mm-hmm.
Because in some ways, if you think about many of the people out there who are trying to help people, they can't take on everybody's pain. You know, that the best place very often to be somebody who can step aside, who has boundaries. So are you crazy is a very important word. Are you nuts? Are you the kind of person who doesn't cry over her son's death and her brother's death, or she, even though she may cry, you should be grieving more is what people say. And I say no. I spoke to somebody about this just the other day. We were talking about the death of somebody who he cares about a great deal. And he said, I would hate to lose that person more than anything in the world, but if he goes, he goes. And I'll be okay. And you are okay. And you're one of the people out there who are part of the teachers that we have. It's not that everybody should be like you,
right.
But we have people who will do the deep grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the people like you. Who will hand out the handkerchiefs?
Amazingly enough, is I felt closer to him, and I felt this amazing love.
Yeah, well, maybe you are.
Amazing love, because he was loved so much that I really didn't know he was loved that much. So
yeah.
It was incredible. I felt like it was a very spiritual experience. It just almost, it shifted my psyche in a way. I feel like everything that it just shifts me a little bit more into. I don't know, it's like a different reality. I can't really put the words to it and explain it, but I wanted to say something else I think is really important before I go. In the midst of all this, I've been in a relationship with someone that appeared to be very strong personality and always used to point out how I was so feely-feely and my emotions ran my life, and I should be more of a thoughtful person, a more thinking person. I feel too much, and how I was insecure and how I had a low self-esteem. He used to tell me all these things. And the minute I broke up with him, this guy, like, fell apart. And it was amazing to me how I looked at him as this picture of strength, and he was like my teacher trying to tell me about myself. But once I left him, like, he looked like he fell apart to me.
Let me ask you a question. Did you feel good about that?
Did I feel good that he fell apart?
Yeah.
No, it was just interesting to me. It showed me, it taught me, like, this person, it's almost like it showed me my strength, that all the time I had my strength. But my strength might have intimidated him or made him look, my strength made him see his vulnerability that he wasn't ready to see, so he projected back onto me that I wasn't strong. And, you know, it's almost like it made me question. He always used to make me question myself. You know, like, wait a minute, I know who I am.
How's he doing nowadays?
I tell you, I don't think he's doing too good. I mean, I saw him at my brother's funeral. He looked very sad. He doesn't look well. And I feel like, you know, there's nothing really.
Sounds to me like you've got a lot of wisdom, Marie, and you're a very special person. And I think anybody who would find you would feel very close to you and closer and closer. And then when you leave, all of their frailties would come out. Because you're the kind of person who is a dependent person that people depend on. And there's something about that, you know, there's something about that that is, you know, maybe some part of you on the inside wanted this to happen as well. Maybe you're happy they fall apart because you lean on them so much. And maybe you're an independent person. Maybe you're a person who doesn't want a relationship. Have you had a relationship since?
No, this is very recent.
Yeah.
This is very recent, like within the past couple. And I knew for a long time we've been breaking up, going back. It's hard for me to get away, you know, I stay.
I know, but Marie, how would you like to be alone for a while?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, right, and it's amazing how you can't be, right?
I'll find out.
Give it a shot. I think you're going to learn a great deal, and I think you have a lot of gifts to give. But I think you get lost in relationships. I think
you're
just get lost. You get too involved, and there's too much issue, and most of them are about nothing anyway. So we need you giving out the tissues. Come to my office. I'll give you a job.
Really? I could use a job right now.
Marie, thank you so much for calling
in.
Come on. Bye. 212-209.
Nobody yet.
212-209-2900. That's our number. We're taking some calls today.
Okay.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I'm just calling. I find this radio really amazing here. I don't know that I've ever heard anything quite like you guys. Thank you.
Have you ever heard WBAI before?
I'm a truck driver, so I'm scanning the stations as I drive, and I've come across Gary Noel once before, and then I just heard this positive radio coming on.
Positive Mind, that's the program, yeah.
Positive Mind. And I thought, oh, that might be really good. I like to learn lots of different things along the lines of, like, the power of now and Eckhart Tolle. And I've been reading and studying a lot and growing in the last couple of years of my life. So when I heard Positive Minds, I thought, wow, you know, let me listen to it. And you guys really brought some really good questions to my attention here, and I thought I'd call, especially when you said to that woman, that gentleman prior to the woman that was just on about how it took a lot of confidence to call. I'm a 30-year-old male, and I've been in and out of therapy for probably 15 years of my life. Half of my life I've spent in therapy, counseling, psychology, numerous amounts of antidepressants and psychological drugs. And, I found that at this point, I've realized I was raised by addicts and very codependent people, and that that nurturer and that rescuer that needs to rescue people and to help people is very fundamental in my being. And I've been trying to get past that and get to be on my own and develop some self-strength, because I feel very weak.
Good, and I understand. What's your first name?
Rich.
Rich, let me give you my first tip, okay? Now, this is one that many other people who have listened before have heard me say, but I'm going to teach you a phrase. Are you ready for this phrase?
Yes, I am.
The phrase is, I'm sorry to hear that. Got that?
Okay.
Now, just say that out loud.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Right. So now when somebody comes to you with a problem and they want to talk to you about their problems, that's the response I want you to have instead of anything else. No giving advice, no asking more information, just say, I'm sorry to hear that. People would appreciate somebody being compassionate enough to say that, number one. People never listen to the advice that you would give them, number two. They don't really ask you for more involvement. There's an old part of you, Rich, that has been dying to get involved in people and trying to help them and cure them and fix them. But you're learning to get away from that. So the tool I give you, you know, this is one that we put in your toolbox. It goes along with being able to adjust your carburetor. Do they still adjust carburetors? They still use those tools? This is the one. The one is, I'm sorry to hear that. Learn to say that to people as they tell you about their woes and see how that changes your life. That's a beginning. What do you think?
I think that's pretty amazing, really. My the first thought that comes to mind there is, just the word sorry itself. I don't know that I truly genuinely feel sorry for anyone for any particular thing, but the need to help and the need to give advice and to teach people and help people has always been very overwhelming. So I think that could be really, really helpful to me.
Well, okay, let's talk about the sorry part. The sorry part is the following. The person who you're talking to is in pain. Whether they put the pain on themselves or the pain comes from the outside, the part that we're sorry about is, I'm sorry that you're a human in pain. I'm sorry that you feel bad. That's the part. I'm not apologizing for it. I just feel bad for you. And that's what people want to know, that you have to say to them. I'm sorry to hear that. Rich, you try it out. You'll become a WBAI fan forever. You could also go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and whenever you get like you feel like taking a program on the road with you, you can download. We have all our archives up there.
Oh, that's very cool. I didn't realize that. Positiveminds.com. Thank you.
Okay, Rich. Nice to talk to you, and welcome to WBAI.
You as well. Thank you, sir.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to leave you now and come back tomorrow morning with more of this stuff. My special thanks to Rich and to all the other people who called in. And, of course, to you, Lisa Arnone, for helping me organize and get this all together.
It was my pleasure, Armand.
Walk without a sound. Down forgotten streets, their shadows kiss the ground. Their footsteps sing a song that's ended before it's begun.